Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Shuttlepod at the Disco. This is our sixth episode of Shuttlepod at the Disco, where we look back at Star Trek Discovery episodes, talk about what happened, whether we liked it, didn't like it, and what kind of things they're adding to canon and changing. Today, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery episode number 7, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. I'm your host, Kaylee Iacovino, and I am joined today by Matt Wright.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, I'm pretty good. How are you, Matt?
Oh, pretty great. So you know, the other day I was redecorating my house a little bit, and I thought, you know what this could use? Some kind of a touch to make it look more like a starship. Do you know anything about that? Anything where I could get something?
Oh, totally. I have so many ideas. But you know what you should really check out? Bye Bye Robot sells really awesome stickers that are made by Michael Okuda himself. And they're designed to look like Okudagrams, and you can stick them to anything in your house or your computer or your cubicle at work and feel like you're on the Enterprise. Totally.
Awesome. That's so awesome.
And you know, the Shuttlepod podcast is brought to you by the humans at Bye Bye Robot, purveyors of fine art from the future. Bye Bye Robot sells officially licensed Star Trek art made by multiple artists in many different styles at prices starting around $25. Go to byebyerobot.com to learn more.
Well, thanks. I guess I will.
I think we should all do that, but first...
Oh, I think we all should.
I think we should do that right after we finish talking about Star Trek Discovery episode number 7.
Yes.
Episode number 7 is titled Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. It was written by Aaron Eli Colietti and Jess Alexander, and it was directed by David M. Barrett. So, Matt, yesterday this episode aired. It was number 7 in the Discovery franchise. I would say is pretty different from the ones we've seen so far. A little bit different in tone, and it's a little bit more of sort of diving into a very classic sci-fi trope. You know, what's your initial reaction to it?
Indeed. I thought it was a nice little breath of fresh air. I thought it was different in the sense that it wasn't needed, you know, didn't have to be heavily kind of serial, you know,
mm-hmm.
wasn't mired in the kind of serial arcs that we had for the most part. Obviously, I didn't know that Mudd was abandoned by Lorca, but other than that, not really, you know, and it's kind of obvious, and he makes it very clear in the dialogue he was abandoned by Lorca. So yeah, you can pretty much jump right in and enjoy this. I thought it was pretty great. Like, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I would agree. I really enjoyed, like, just like you say, the episodic nature of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a fun little sort of little note in the serialized season. And I liked that it was pretty lighthearted. A lot of the, like, tonally, a lot of Discovery so far has been pretty heady and pretty dark and pretty deep. You know, certainly it makes you think. But this one made you laugh more, I think, than the others.
Yeah.
And it opens, right, with them having a disco party, basically.
Yeah, which, come on, how great is that, right?
It's perfect.
Party on the disco, yeah.
I love how they show the shot from the outside of the ship and you see the lights going, changing colors. This is pretty cool.
It's great.
And we get to see a drunk Tilly being an adorable BFF to Burnham.
Oh, totally. I love that. It's great.
Although I have to admit, I was pretty surprised how quickly she sobered up later when Burnham ended up needing her help later in the episode.
Well, yeah, of course, I don't know. We don't really see how she gets down there. For all we know, she stumbled into a turbo lift and then was like, I can wave this tricorder over this giant thing.
Whatever. Yeah, you know, like shook it off.
Yeah. So who knows? But yes, it is kind of amusing, especially because we know that this is before Synthahol, so you can't just shake it off in theory.
Right.
This is the real stuff.
Yeah. Oh, man. Synthahol's so goofy.
Yeah, it's good that that's not a gimmick right now.
Yeah.
Though, speaking of a gimmick, I don't know how I feel about them playing beer pong. I feel like that's frat bros from, you know, the 20th century, 21st century. I don't know. Is that really? Would they still be playing that? I don't know.
Yeah, at least thank goodness it wasn't red plastic cups, but it was green plastic cups.
Yeah, and they were translucent green, too. So
yes,
it was a little they were spacey. Space cups. Yeah, space cups.
So at least space cups. Oh, dear.
At least there was that. But yeah, I kind of felt that, like, you know.
Yeah, it was a little... When they do little things like that, especially because they're playing modern music to like modern to today.
So apparently they're all like hipsters basically, right? Because they're like, oh, listen to this old, you know, like classic, ultra hipsters, like Wyclef Jean like song. Oh yeah, you know, it's like,
but it you know, if when everything is so modern, so there's like the beer pong in combination with the just the tone of the party, like nothing in it looked like it wasn't happening in 2017. So it does, that does sometimes pull me out a little bit of the story.
Yeah, that was a little off-putting, but just that part of it.
But it was so short that I was like, whatever. I let myself kind of breeze over that.
And it's cute, and it has those nice moments between Burnham and Tilly, and of course, lots of repeated moments between Burnham and Tyler that we'll get into.
Yeah, well, maybe, why don't we just jump right into that? Because that starts right there in the party, right?
That's true. Let's talk about that. I think it's one of the nicest, sort of most honest kind of points of view from Burnham in a in quite a while, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's her finding a routine and then finding some comfort in that and then realizing, well, yes, but I better get out of, you know, I'm going to get out of my comfort zone here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's going to go to a gulp, like, party, you know, basically. And it was, that was really cute. Like, it was really great. And it was really nice to see Burnham try. Try to sort of be the fish out of water and actually go immerse herself with her fellow crewmates.
Yeah. I liked that. I feel like the theme of this episode was getting out of your comfort zone. I think that theme can, you could find that in a lot of threads throughout the episode, particularly with Burnham, but I think also with the audience, right? Because like we were kind of both agreeing that this episode was a little bit different, a little bit of a departure from what we've seen in terms of the tonality mostly, and also the storytelling of what we've seen so far, Discovery. So in a little way, that's a little bit out of the comfort zone for what we've come to know. And seeing things like, you know, a party on the ship, seeing these, you know, seeing the love story basically between Burnham and Tyler, that's maybe pulling the audience out of their quote unquote comfort zone a bit to see a different side of Star Trek, really. And then also with Stamets, you know, he's been affected by the spore drive, and maybe he's not out of his comfort zone, but he's certainly in a different, he's exploring a different side of himself.
Oh yeah.
So maybe that's a better way to say it. It's exploring a different side of things. Mm-hmm. And for Burnham, that meant coming out of her comfort zone.
Oh yeah. So I like what we see of her. I mean, of course, like, and Sonequa Martin-Green, of course, just nails it. I love that they finally gave her even more to do instead of just sort of tread the line between Vulcan and human.
Yeah.
You know? It was good. It was really good to see her get the character out of her comfort zone and then let Sonequa do something with it for once, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was really great. And I also liked, of course, yeah, Burnham and Tyler have a lot of heat. It's good. Like, that was really good. They have a really good thing going. Even when they don't know it necessarily because everything reset, right?
So let me ask you this. Do you like the Burnham-Tyler pairing? And B, whether you like it or not, what should their couple name be?
Oh, right. The couple name. That's important. Well, A, I like it. They're both two really good-looking people, so it's kind of hard to be like, no, this is terrible. It's like, yeah. And Tyler obviously seems like a super, like, pretty in touch, like, pretty, like, decent guy. Surprisingly sensitive and kind of in touch for a guy who seems to be mostly a military kind of guy, and of course, needless to say, the guy who's supposedly anyway been tortured for 7 months straight.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of amazing. And Stamets even says that to him. He kind of looks at him and goes,
yeah,
you're surprisingly grounded, you know, or whatever it was, something like that. For a guy who's been tortured for 7 months. And that's very true. And so, you know, we're not really sure what that means at this moment. That's the one kind of caveat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what does that mean about him? Is he really that grounded?
Or yeah.
Is he somehow that removed and he's just faking it really well? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's somehow
exactly.
That withdrawn.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say. And of course, there's that other third crazy story tangent that we could go on just for a second, which is he really Vok the Klingon reborn? And if that's the case, well, then he's doing a really good job faking it all,
right?
Or not faking it all, because he thinks he's maybe been reprogrammed.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of a tangent. There's more about that with an article on Trek Movie and whatnot, but we don't have to go down that road too much.
Yeah, but it is fun to delve into the fan theories every once in a while and just see what people think are coming up.
Yeah,
but yeah, I'm, you know, I'm like with you partway on the Burnham Tyler pairing. Still trying to come up with a good couple's name. Burler? Tynum? No, just doesn't work. Michael Tynum, and Ash? Yeah. It's hard.
Mash. Ashkel? There you go.
Mash, maybe? I don't know. We'll come up with something. Byler. Maybe it's just going to be Byler.
Byler's not bad.
Byler.
It flows, at least. Yeah.
So do you ship Byler? Hashtag I ship Byler. If you do, leave a comment on Twitter. Hashtag I ship Byler. I don't know if I hashtag ship Byler. I'm happy for Burnham because she needs this. She needs whatever it is right now. She needs this bit of happiness, and she deserves it, you know. And she's been, you know, obviously fallen some pretty freaking hard times. So it's nice to see her being happy and opening up to someone. And like, so that it makes me happy. But you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head. You know, is he really that grounded? I don't feel like I can trust the guy yet. I'm so skeptical of him, and I'm almost like, I feel like I feel like I said something similar in a previous episode. Oh right, it was when Saru was, I thought, being a little bit dickish to Burnham when she first got on the ship, and I was like feeling like I was Burnham's BFF, like gonna watch her back. Like if I were on Discovery, I would go up to Tyler and be like, hey man, like, nice to meet you, you seem like a great guy, you know, it's really great, I know you're going out with my friend, but if you hurt her, I will end you.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I mean, true. Like, I feel actually,
that's legit, and that's actually one thing that Tilly is not, because she's a little too bubbly for that, you know. She's more interested in just like kind of letting Burnham loosen up and, you know, get her laid or whatever. But that she, if, you know, there's that other BFF role, right, where it's like, yeah, but you can't hurt my girl, right? You can't,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So, but Tilly is apparently not that person, at least at the moment.
Well, Tilly's not naturally skeptical, and I guess I'm not usually either, but I don't know. It just hit, you know, he was plucked out of this prison he was in for seven months. Like,
it's
guy,
too convenient.
It's too convenient that he just popped right back into reality like it was no problem. So.
So, yeah, I mean, in theory, I don't know. Anyway, on screen, though, I have to say the two actors do a damn good job. Let's say that. Oh, man.
Yeah.
I totally buy them.
Yeah.
It's like having chemistry and whatnot. It's great.
For sure. Yeah. And like you said, Sonequa was awesome in this episode. It was nice to see her getting to emote more than she has in the past.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So let's talk a bit about the whale in the room, perhaps.
yes.
Captain Mudd. Harcourt Fenton Mudd is back. There's a lot to talk about here, I think.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I want to point out something that I think is kind of funny about this. Like, it's odd about this episode in a way, is that while we find this all to be kind of an interesting, sort of refreshing, almost light episode, there's sort of sewn throughout this is the fact that Mudd is actually like kind of a ridiculously like angry killing machine.
That actually
for jokes
got pretty dark,
and if you think about it, like, it's kind of played for laughs because haha, we know there's a reset button, but like, oh man, he is pretty, you know, he's pretty damn harsh. Like, this part is definitely where he strays from the Mudd we knew before. Like, this is the kind of side of him that's pretty dark.
Yeah, like Burnham having to watch Tyler be disintegrated inside out by, what was it, weaponized dark matter?
Yeah, it's like little dark matter marbles, basically, yeah.
That Mudd said was the most painful way to die in space. Like, that's, I mean, that wasn't just, you know, shoot him with a phaser, oh, he, you know, off-screen death and we're going to reset. That was like, that was pretty intense.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. And yeah, the whole montage of all the various ways he's killed Lorca, funny, but also not funny when you think about it.
I did love the way they shot it, though.
Yeah. And also, by the way, major kudos to everyone involved and the director and stuff for this. This episode was great in that regard. Just, I mean, it must have been tedious to shoot because of all the different versions, but amazing end product, you know?
Yeah.
Just like attention to detail because, you know, you got to shoot all these variations, but amazingly done, I have to say.
Now, kudos to David Barrett, who is the director of this episode. I totally agree. That, and I think I would, if I had to submit a segment of this episode as his best work, I would definitely pick that scene that you just mentioned, the little montage of all of the ways he was killing Lorca, because it was just so creatively planned and well executed, and the shots were seamless. Like, oftentimes you can tell where they've edited and faded the background or faded from one shot to the next, and the face like warps a little bit because it's moving over to the next shot. This was seamless. I thought it looked fantastic. I was just loving watching that on the screen.
Yeah. One of the things I think they did that was really smart was that it almost always started with Mud walking through the door. So then you don't quite know what configuration you're going to walk into.
Right, you know, but then sometimes you see him, and then all of a sudden he's coming towards you, and he's coming from a completely different part of the bridge. It's just looked great.
It's very well done. So
what about Mud in general? Like, do you buy him? Do you buy Rainn Wilson as Mud, and do you buy this version of Mud?
I certainly like Rainn Wilson as this version of Mud. I'll say that. And in general, I like him as Mud, like sort of generally, because I think he does the right amount of kind of channeling the mischievous troublemaker side that we all kind of like. I do have to pause, you know, at like how kind of crazy and casually he's killing people, which is definitely not something that the other version of Mud from TOS would do.
Sure.
Like, the other version of Mud is a little too foppish and like ridiculous to really even hold a phaser seriously. I feel like, you know, like he would hold it like it's, you know,
like he wasn't, like he didn't poison. Know what he was doing with it.
Yeah, or he'd hold it, you know, daintily off, be like, oh, I can't believe I'm holding this thing.
Yeah,
you know. And there was a little flourish of that. If you look, Rainn kind of held the phaser with kind of a little flourish, but boy, he used it, you know, very seriously. Like, it was not a joke.
You know, I actually buy him pretty well, I think. I love Rainn Wilson as Mud. I think he's fantastic. And yeah, I'm
such good casting.
I'm okay with this edgier hardcore Fence and Mud. I totally buy it, because I think it's not such a departure. Like, yeah, he's different, but to me it's a reimagining. But it's not even that extreme of a reimagining compared to some other characters that have been reimagined in the past. Like thinking about other franchises. So, you know, I'm pretty happy with this Mud, actually. I do agree that, like, yeah, dude is a little bit dark. The guy's messed up. Legit, like, Mud's got some issues. I thought it was pretty great, and I liked sort of getting to know the new Mud in this episode. So
It does make me sort of sad that this is a second and final episode for the season.
That's right. Ah, oh, I keep forgetting.
We know he's only in two, so.
Yeah.
But what this means is I really hope that they come up with an interesting way to bring him back in season two at some point.
Yeah, I can't imagine that we've seen the end of Harcourt Fenton Mud.
Yeah. We know he's just this, you know, scourge, right? That just, he just shows back up. So I hope they'd figure it out, especially because, like us, I think the fan reaction has been really, just generally really positive for Rainn Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
So I imagine they'll figure out a way to bring him back.
And I sort of hate to do this because I'm going to jump around in time a little bit. But given the nature of the episode, I think that's okay. I kind of want to skip right to the end because we're talking about Mud leaving and the possibility of him coming back in the future.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, because I don't know. I had some questions.
I agree. I feel that the end is the most problematic part of this whole thing.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes. Because I can't remember who says it. I think Lorca says, you know, if you kill a Starfleet captain, like, they'll put you away forever. Like, that's, you don't do that. And he literally killed a Starfleet captain 4 or 5 times.
Yep.
And that's not just because he reset the timeline, just because Lorca ended up living, doesn't negate the fact that he killed Lorca 53 times and all these other people and tried to take over a Federation starship. And by the way, that's like the most top secret, you know, flagship of the Federation.
Yep.
So he just waltzes on, tries to take it over, nearly succeeds, and they just let him go on his way?
Yes. Very strange. Like, this makes no sense. And then, of course, here comes perhaps the most troubling part, is somehow the implication with all of this is, oh, teehee, this poor bastard is stuck in the bonds of, you know, matrimony, and that's worse. And it's like, what? No, this really weird kind of sexist thing, and it's weird, and I think they were trying to be funny,
yeah,
and make it like, you know, how, say, I, Mud ends with him stuck, you know, with the androids, right? I think they were trying to be funny, and it was more, I mean, I'm hoping that what they meant was, you know, for a guy like Mud to be tied down, it's just awful, right? Like, he doesn't actually want to be stuck in a marriage day to day. Not that marriage day to day sucks for everyone, but for him, it's a terrible thing, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't, you know, these are all things we're kind of reading into it and assuming. Like, it doesn't... And like you said, he basically committed some form of treason, at least, because he now has top secret knowledge, was trying to sell it. You know, I mean, he has top secret knowledge of a top secret.
Yeah, that too. System. Yeah, he has all his knowledge of the spore drive and all this stuff. Like, he's mm-hmm. And he's proven to be a dangerous and capable man. Who says he's not going to try this again?
Right.
I'm sure he has a million other... What, you know, he's like Wile E. Coyote. He's going to write off to the Acme company, get another device, come back to Discovery and try to take it again.
Totally.
Why wouldn't and he?
That, yeah, and that's a very... I mean, and we know Mud does that sort of thing, right? He's always up to some angle. So, yeah, why wouldn't he? If we can diverge for a second, I actually liked the little MacGuffin that they used for this. I actually liked that it was some kind of crazy time crystal. I feel like that maybe comes right out of... Maybe a original series, I think, actually feels like a little more like something maybe the animated series would use, which is not bad. I think, like, it's kind of fun.
Sure.
And I would actually kind of put forth that this kind of goofy MacGuffin is actually nicer and sort of more refreshing that they used. More refreshing than, say, almost anything that happens in Voyager, because somehow they find a temporal anomaly, like, 300 times, right? And it's like... We don't need a temporal anomaly. No, here's a time crystal. Like, yes, that's the same, serves the same function.
Right.
But it's way less worn out. And it's kind of goofy. And right. It's like, oh, there's this time crystal.
I like that they threw a line of dialogue, because it's exactly what you say it is. It's a MacGuffin. So we don't need to spend needless amounts of time explaining, taking up time in the script, explaining what it is. It's just, hey, audience, we're in a time loop. Just go with it. And Star Trek has done this before. Obviously, this very exact thing. How many time loop episodes have we had? TNG had two.
Mm-hmm. Voyager had a number.
Yeah. So, you know, this is not an uncommon thing. And I like that they had one line of dialogue where Burnham goes, oh, time crystal. We learned about those in the Vulcan Science Academy. Done. Explains why people in Starfleet wouldn't have known about it because they didn't study that sort of thing.
And it's like, you know, it's rumors. You know, the Vulcans have heard or whatever,
right,
basically.
Exactly. And it's a reason, it was a plausible reason for Burnham to explain to the audience and to her friends what the thing was. I thought it was perfect. Right. It was one little line and it tied it up for me. So, you know what? I'm happy with that.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't need, oh my God, there's, you know, a chronoton field forming. What is this? Blah, blah, blah. You know, they just, you know, I mean, I like Voyager a lot, actually, but that was a huge weakness of that era. Just the writing, you know, just it happened a lot. So I'm actually really happy that it just went back to kind of a goofy, simple thing, which very much feels like it belongs in the original series. That kind of, we don't need to spend time on it. Here's kind of a crazy, wacky thing.
Yeah, this is a sci-fi story. Just go with it. It's like, what if the Discovery kept blowing up?
Right, exactly.
And go.
So, yeah. So, again, even pretty happy with the MacGuffin, you know? Pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I was fine with it. And I think for an episode that doesn't take itself too seriously, it can get away with more little things like that, little inconsistencies.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Before we finish up with Mud, I kind of want to go down a little path about what's with all this talk of money and debt that he's in. So to be fair, we know that TOS was never very clear on the economics. Like, it starts to become more clear when you get to the, like, well, it's very clear when it comes to the 24th century, because Gene Roddenberry got very into the visionary side of his stuff and got really into a hard no, like, no, we don't use, you know, cash or credit kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah, the whole we've evolved beyond it thing, which always got me a little bit.
Right, that whole thing. But it was never clear what went on during, like, the 23rd century. It was always kind of muddled. There's definitely been talk of credits.
There's been
talk of things like that. So there's, you know, it's not unprecedented. But it does seem kind of crazy that Mudd was going to, you know, sell the Discovery's technology to Klingons. He was going to do this. He was going to do that. And it's like, wait, what are we talking about? Like, what money would they really use? And certainly almost anyone in the core of the Federation at this point still wouldn't really use money. Like, it's definitely, you know, the fringe worlds still might use some sort of money or barter or whatever, but almost certainly no one in the core of the Federation even worries about that, right?
Sure, but I mean, I honestly had no problem with it because they never really said money. They just said how much would they pay, a lot. You know,
oh, yeah, pay. You're
in
right.
What form does that come? Is it, are they bartering?
He does say he's
is
in mounds of, a mountain of debt, though, at some point.
Sure,
but again,
but
that could
be
like
in,
resources.
Yeah, you can be indebted to someone with for money, for payment, for favors. You know, and certainly even in TNG, I'm sure there were people who talked about trading and bartering and some form
and they
of
did.
Debt. And certainly, you know, in DS9 era, obviously, money comes back in a big way with quarks and everything.
Right, and that would be, again, non-Federation, though. You know what I mean? Like, no one inside sort of the core of the Federation carries money.
True, but he wasn't trying to sell to the Federation, you know?
No, he wasn't.
He was trying to sell to the
Klingons. So the one other thing, and so like I say, it doesn't bother me too much, but it's kind of interesting to hear all this talk of money because we don't usually hear much of it. I will say that the one other thing that's interesting then is that his new father-in-law, right? Like Stella's father is some kind of really well-known arms dealer who's selling to both sides. And that's the part that I have a little bit harder time with, which is like, what and why is he allowed to operate at all? That dude should probably be locked up in a prison somewhere. Like, the Federation wouldn't put up with, like, a random rogue arms dealer,
right.
I don't think.
Well,
I don't quite understand that.
So I buy it up to the final... So, you know, that we already talked about how there's this issue in the final scene where they just release Mud into this guy's custody. So if they're going to do that with Mud, I guess I can buy that they're going to do it with him too and not arrest the guy. But I buy the rest of it. I buy the fact that this guy exists and that he's an arms dealer trading both sides. I don't have trouble imagining some kind of black market. The Federation doesn't control all of even their own space, presumably.
Sure. And we know that there's, again, to go back to things like Deep Space Nine, there are absolutely arms dealers in Deep Space Nine. They're mentioned, you know, multiple times, usually as some kind of third party. Like, they're not humans, right? They're not members of the Federation.
Sure, but you could be a human and, you know, leave the Federation or act outside of the laws of the Federation. Or maybe he was born on a non-Federation world, this guy. I mean, he was human looking.
He was a human, yeah.
Do we know for sure he's human?
Well, I mean, I think it's assumed because Stella certainly seems to be, and certainly is when we see her later, or certainly looks like it.
Sure.
You know. But again, you're right. These are sort of assumptions.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are assumptions. It's true.
But fun little things to think about.
But something to think about. No, again, nothing that like, oh, this ruined it. I'm just like, oh, that's interesting. We should, you know, talk about it. And we just did.
So let's activate our time crystal real quick because I want to jump back to, I'm channeling Jared right now. Jared couldn't be here today, so I have to try to do all these nice segues.
It's true, and well done so far.
Thank you.
I think Jared would be proud.
So I'm activating my time crystal so we can jump back to Burnham. Because we talked a bit about Burnham and Tyler, Byler, hashtag iShipByler. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about Stamets, too, because he is the intermediary here. He's the matchmaker.
Yeah. Right. He's also the watcher, basically, because he's out of time watching this happen again and again.
And he imparts various bits of wisdom to Burnham in several of these loops and helps her on the journey. And it's nice because despite the looping, we do still get to see advancements in the storyline as things are going. So each loop is, gives us more detail and they move the story along a little bit further each time.
Yeah, it's so well done that way.
So I think earlier you were saying that it's sort of a shame that everything was getting reset.
Because,
you know, we're here as the audience. We're watching this growth happen to these characters. And then it's reset each time. And I don't know if you felt this at all as well, but I kind of felt like something was preserved, at least in Burnham and Tyler. Some little seed of something was preserved as the loops went on. And maybe that's just me reading too much into this, but I feel like there's somewhere in the back of their brain, because their bodies are going through this over and over and over again. So they have been through this cycle so many times. And yes, their memories have been erased. But I feel like there's some, you know, pathways in there that remain sort of connected. Because it seems like the more they go, they almost seem to recall what they had just done. Like that they trust each other a little bit quicker. You know, Burnham trusts Stamets a little bit quicker each time. So I don't know. I like my headcanon, I guess, is that each time, once Burnham is told by Stamets, and after a few loops of her being told what's happening, that she starts to maybe not remember, but retain something from the past loops. So I feel I feel like there's some unspoken thing that maybe is settled around Burnham and Tyler now. Even though they don't remember what happened, it sort of still happened for them.
I don't know. That's a good point. It does seem like somehow they're, well, they always seem to have good chemistry. But yeah, it kind of seems like, you know, it's one of those unspoken things that somehow their chemistry just got better, right? They don't know why, but somehow.
Right, exactly. I mean, we know why. Exactly.
But somehow they just got sort of better chemistry with each other.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was trying to say.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can see that. I mean, again, I don't really know, but that's also kind of a trope of these things. Not in a bad way, but we kind of see that happen. Like, okay, so the mothership of all these, right? The classic is cause and effect. And they start to, you know, catch on way sooner, right? Like, they start to see the patterns pretty quickly. There's, you remember that, like, Beverly Crusher, she starts to realize that what's going to be dealt from the deck.
Right.
Like, it, somehow that sticks. So you kind of, you're right. There's, actually, I'd forgotten about that until we just started talking about it. There is almost a precedence with these, with, like, you know, the classic sort of TNG version of this, that, yeah, maybe somehow a little bit of this is sticky. You don't really know why, right? But it sticks around a little bit, sort of almost subconsciously.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'd like to think that that happened.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense that, because otherwise, how did they move? So, because it's only 10 minutes, right? Or 30 minutes, sorry. It's only 30 minutes. So how did you, you know, convince people every time faster and faster? Well, at a certain point, you can't, right? Like, you're going to have to re-explain this to someone every time. You can't get, you know, more efficient at it. At a certain point, everyone's going to, you know, disbelieve you or like whatever, right? So
I was just thinking about, you're saying it's 30 minutes each loop, right?
Yeah.
And we think they had what, about 55? Because at one point
he says something about 53.
He says,
so
he kills Lorca
53 ends.
times, but then he goes in a couple more loops,
right?
I think
at least two more.
So let's say he was in 55, he did 55 loops, 30 minutes each. That's 1,650 minutes.
Yep.
And which equates to 27 and a half hours.
Yeah, it's more than a day of doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so no wonder Stamets was going a little nutty there at the end. He's like, if you don't believe me, I'm going to throw myself out an airlock.
Yeah, the poor Stamets. He's just like sort of semi there, sort of semi not, just watching this whole thing.
You know, and side reboot. Note, I've got to say, I feel really bad for Culber because I know everyone is loving the new happy-go-lucky Stamets, but that's not exactly the guy that Culber fell in love with, right?
That is true. And in fact, we get a cute, really cute story of how they met. And it is, of course, around him being kind of a jerk and
a curmudgeon
about
it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that is a good point. You're right that it's a new side for sure. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what he thinks, you know? Like, what does he think about that?
Yeah, like when he was saying, oh, I have to apologize for my partner, he's been different. I was like, you poor guy. Like, you've been living with him for... Because it wasn't clear to me how long it's been since he injected himself, but like
at least a few weeks or something. Yeah.
So for a couple of weeks, his partner's been acting like a completely different person. And even if you like this new person, it's like, well, wait, I don't feel like I know you anymore.
Exactly. So it is like almost a new person.
Yeah. So I feel bad for him. I hope everything is okay between them because they seem really good together.
Mm-hmm. Culber seems like a guy who won't just like leave, let's say, though, because of a change. Sure. So at least there's that. Yeah. They would figure out a new role together, their new roles.
What else?
Well, I will say, Lorca's weapons room, we didn't really get to see a lot of like what goes on in there, and like, but boy, he's definitely got some nasty stuff considering those crazy little dark matter, like marble things.
My God, no kidding.
And how they very slowly and torturously disintegrate you.
Oh, I remember something I wanted to mention. Let's talk about for a moment, Burnham died for Tyler.
Yes.
She killed herself in order to so that he could live.
Yeah, which is, oh man, that was such a great moment. Like, she figures out that, hey, no kidding, like, I'm actually a very valuable person, like, asset, right? So, you've already killed Tyler, but if I just go swallow some of these marbles, like, you're going to want to reset the timeline. Because, of course, at that point, he didn't want to.
Right.
He had gotten what he wanted.
Right.
So what's the only way to encourage him? And, you know, that's actually really cool because that goes back to that whole thing of her being a little bit of, you know, well, up until now, definitely a pariah, right? And definitely ashamed of the fact that she's this person who at least a lot of people see as starting, whether that's fair or not, as starting the Klingon War, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for once she can use that to her advantage,
right,
which is
right.
Like, hey, you know, I'm way more worthwhile to you to turn into the Klingons because I killed, you know, T'Kuvma. So
yeah,
maybe you want to reset that timeline one more time, you know? It's like,
I think what's interesting to me is that, you know, she didn't do it for Lorca. She didn't do it for the ship. She didn't do it for the Federation, which is her at her core. She did it for Tyler, and she said so out loud. Because he said, why would you do that or something? And she says, for Lieutenant Tyler. And he's like, but I already killed him. And she's like, yeah, no, and you'll have to try again or something. You know, I don't know what it, but she says, for Lieutenant Tyler. And then she eats that thing.
Yeah.
And that's like, so A, that's incredible. Like, she made the choice to die for him. And you can wave it away saying, oh, well, it's going to be reset. But this is the, as far as we know, the most painful way to die imaginable.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Mud could just choose to be like, whatever, she crazy.
Right.
And continue on with his current
plan. He had
plan.
The ship. In fact, he should have done that. If he was smart, he would have said, oh, great, she's gone.
But of course, she was gambling on his kind of greed and whatever. So
yeah.
It's true.
But what a big gamble to take.
Yeah, what a gamble. And it paid off. But yeah, really brave and kind of foolhardy, but in a good, you know, but it was good.
But my next question then is, does she ever tell Tyler what happened?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't think she does. It sounds like Stamets blabbed all over the place about what the different loops, because he filled in all kinds of people.
Yeah, but I don't know that he told Tyler specifically, by the way, you know how you kind of like her and she kind of likes you? Well, she died for you.
No, I don't think he said that. I think that's in Burnham's court.
Yeah,
is what I'm saying.
Yeah, for
I think
sure.
Burnham didn't say it.
I agree.
Because remember, nobody knows what she did, but, well, actually, she doesn't even remember what she did at this point.
Oh, God, that's a good point.
Because Stamets, like, wasn't there. She went into the ready room alone and said, yo, do you know who I am? You know. And,
oh, God. I totally didn't even realize that she wouldn't have remembered. Of course she wouldn't have remembered.
So I don't think, possibly no one, it's very likely that no one knows.
Although she might have said to Stamets, hey, I know how to fix this. I'm going to go.
I don't think so, because you know how she's kind of a single actor.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
We've seen this. That she finds a thing to call, you know, a calling and does it. So I don't think she told anyone. I think, because again, to say something to someone means that someone else knows, and when it repeats, it could be stopped, right? If it repeats, someone could catch on and stop it. So I think she just very single-mindedly just said, this is what I'm doing, and walked into the room.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay, so here's the next question then, the third question on top of that is, you know, the first one was, do they ever find out, I guess, all three of them, or anyone, does anyone ever find out what actually happened, that she died for Tyler? And now that we know that she would die for him, so she does love him, she has some love for him, some form of love for him, and they like each other, are they going to torture the audience by, you know, ripping that romance away from us in a really horrible, terrible way?
Oh man, good point.
Speaking of fan theories,
I hope not.
You know, if Ash Tyler isn't who he says he is, because something's, you know, something's up with the guy. He's this rando guy in a prison that all of a sudden comes back and is, boop, now you are the head of security and you're totally fine. You definitely don't need counseling. You know,
right,
like something
exactly.
is gonna happen with him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my hunch is that we don't, well, as one of those things is, we only have two more episodes left before the hiatus.
Right.
I have a feeling that we don't get come back to whatever's going on with Tyler until at least later in the season.
Yeah, yeah, could be.
So I think we got a little bit of time at least with them to be cute, you know.
Yeah, I guess so. I just want to say, you know, protect yourself, everyone.
Yeah,
because
seriously.
They could hurt us.
Yes, well, we'll see about that. I don't think it's coming yet, but I have a feeling that would be late in the season. It would be like a reveal, you know.
That would be just so terrible. It's like she gets to have one little bit of happiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm
ripped away.
I'm complaining about something that hasn't happened yet, so I shouldn't do that. But
well, but you're being her, you know, you're being her BFF.
I know. It's looking cool. Out.
You're looking out. Well, we'll have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say a couple other interesting things that I thought were kind of cool in the episode is I love Saru's little line where, you know, Lorca's kind of annoyed at the giant space whale being there. And he's just like, I'll just get the fish on board or whatever. And of course, Saru, in a very, you know, kind of typically Data or other outsider role, you know, gets to go, oh, technically it's not a fish. And then Lorca just shoots him a look.
Yeah.
And it's just like, don't even fucking bother. You know, it's like, look, I don't care at all. And it was pretty great, though.
Yeah, that was really fantastic.
Moment. Yeah. Another fun moment is I love that Mud just like calls out the random communications guy. You know, he's just like, you, random communications officer man, like, whatever.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter, right? He's a background actor. And so it's a little fourth wall breaking kind
of. Yeah, it was very much hanging a lantern on it.
Yeah, but it's very fun. And it was a good little nod of like, yeah, who was that dude? I don't know. He was random communications officer man. Like,
right. Yeah, don't you try anything, random communications officer man. Someone should cosplay as random communication officer man.
Oh, that has to happen for sure.
But something, what could you do to make it known that that you were specifically that random communications officer? But you could have a name tag or something.
You'd have to have a name tag. Yeah, I don't know how else you'd know, but yeah.
Another thing that you had mentioned separately to me was the idea of having a disabled person.
Yeah, I think that was really nice to see because we know that, so to go back to that whole 23rd versus 24th century thing, in the 23rd century, you know, looking at TOS, not everybody can be fixed perfectly magically. You know,
yeah, Captain really Pike, anyone? Tech.
Right, Captain Pike. We see a guy who's half his face is disfigured from horrific stuff in Conscious of the King. So not everybody gets fixed up perfectly. So it was kind of nice to see that because one of those things now, other people, of course, I'd be interested to know what other people think, but I know that it's always been a shortcoming of Trek. One of those areas it's kind of been short on is actually showing people with disabilities, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, look at Geordi.
Well, okay. So that's true. I was thinking more of like kind of more physical handicap kind of thing.
Sure.
Because Geordi's not like, you know, doesn't have mobility issues.
Sure, that's true.
And it's interesting that you, in theory, right, we should see, like, the doorways are certainly wide enough. You know, they're ADA compliant, right? I mean, they really are. They're wide.
Mm-hmm.
And in theory, like in a modern, you know, and with enough technology, this shouldn't be an issue for most jobs, right? Like, most jobs on a starship, not all of them, obviously, but a lot of jobs on a starship, it's fine that you're sitting, right? And so it's just interesting. It was nice to see.
Yeah.
I think it was a good, the heart, you know, their heart was in the right place to actually show someone in a chair.
Yeah, and it
in uniform.
It brings
serving, obviously.
I feel like it also brings a level of seriousness to everything that they do, and a level of danger, maybe even because you know, with Lorca as well, his eyes can't be fixed, so he would have to get his eyes replaced if he wanted, you know, to have his vision fixed. So it's this idea that you know, yes, it's the future, but we still haven't invented the magic wand, you know, that can just fix everything. So there are still things to overcome, including physical handicaps and otherwise. So I think it brings a little bit more realism and makes it feel like the stakes are a little bit higher. You know, something could happen if they're out on a mission. If someone gets hurt, they might not be able to just be patched up magically in the sick bay. So,
right. Exactly.
So is there any other fun little moments from this episode that you wanted to call out to?
There's lots of little nuggets. I was trying to think of what else is like we should really talk about, but I also kind of really liked the little line by Mud where he says there really are so many ways to blow this ship up. It's almost a design flaw.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, okay, that's really funny and kind of I feel like that's almost a little Star Warsy too, like kind of a little wink and a nod to like the Death Star having a design flaw. You know, it's kind of like
I had the same thought. I thought of the Death Star too. So
yeah. I feel like it's kind of a sci-fi wink and nod to all kinds of franchises right there. So
there's,
I thought that was fun.
There's one other line I wanted to mention, and it's probably nothing, but I noticed it. So there's one throwaway line on the bridge. I believe it's Lieutenant Tyler. Lorca asks, oh, have they beamed that whale aboard yet? And Tyler replies that they have reported that they are 5x5, Captain.
Oh, yeah. Is that military lingo or something?
I don't know, but what I know it from is Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Oh, there you go. So what does it mean?
There's a character named Faith who would always say it, and they kind of joked often that, like, what does that even mean? But it was, like, one of her taglines. And so I was immediately like, oh my God, is this some kind of like wink at Buffy the Vampire Slayer? But it probably is. You're right. It's probably some military saying or something. But I was just like, oh, I just wanted to mention that to see if anyone, maybe someone listening, knows what that phrase is from.
Okay. So I just looked now. It is an unofficial phrase describing the best possible subjective responses used to describe the quality of communications. So a 5x5 is perfectly readable. Like, you know, like, it's like, oh, I hear
like 10,
you.
Like
10-4. Yeah. And so apparently that may be it, because that's certainly like one of the first things that came up. And it seems like something you would talk about, you know. In fact, it comes from like an army radio operator's manual.
Oh, cool.
So there was slang that you could do 5x5. And it's like, yeah, this is perfectly, you know, I can hear you perfectly kind of
cool
thing.
Cool. Because the only time I've ever heard it is on Buffy, which is why I mentioned that.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah. And yeah, I'd never, since I wasn't not really a huge Buffy fan, I should be in theory, but I've never really watched it. Yes, I know, but I should be. Because I like all that kind of stuff. I just, you know, I was also a teenage boy, so at the time, I couldn't really get into it. But in hindsight, I probably would have loved it, you know. Anyway, yeah, no, I'd never heard that before, but I totally figured it's got to be some kind of, somebody went to the military, you know, lingo well. And
probably.
Said,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that, like, that's pretty much all that we hit all the main points, I think in this episode.
Yeah.
A lot of cool stuff. I just enjoyed it. I had a good time watching it. And even though it is a classic sci-fi trope that's been done maybe to death, I liked it anyway. I liked just, you know, I watch sci-fi to see sci-fi. So it was nice to see one of these what-if stories.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it was a nice diversion from the overall, you know, arc that's going on.
Now, next week's episode is, I'm wondering if it's going to get a little bit darker. Because the name of next week's episode, episode 8, is in Latin. It's Si Vis Pacem, Para Bellum, which translates to, if you want peace, prepare for war.
Mm-hmm.
So that episode
sounds more serious to me.
That episode comes out November 5th in the U.S. and Canada. I'm just wondering what we think might happen.
Go ahead. Oh, well, I know that this is episode 8. We've been hearing really good things about this, actually, probably since the summer, because people have been raped, like, you know, people on the show, etc., have been raving about this episode that was written by Kirsten Beyer, and it's Saru centric. So we get to learn a lot more about how Saru, you know, thinks and works.
A fan favorite. And we love Saru.
Yeah, good Saru. And so, but anyway, we've been hearing just people have raved about, you know, when they're reading drafts or whatever, they've been raving about it at, you know, Comic-Con and Star Trek Las Vegas and whatnot, that they just go, oh, this is amazing. Like, you are going to love it. It's very Trek. It's also very touching and very, you know, a unique, we get Sarah's unique perspective on things. And so I'm really, because we know it's this episode, you know, it's episode 8, I'm really looking forward to that part of it.
I am too. I love Saru. I think everyone, I haven't heard anyone say they don't like the guy. What an interesting character. What a like lovely personality. And Doug Jones just does such a fantastic job with him.
Doug Jones nails it.
Yeah, he does.
He's great.
So it's going to be really cool to learn more about him, to see him sort of lead the way, maybe, I'm thinking. You know, sort of lead the story along.
And it seems like it. The few little clips that they showed on After Trek, I won't talk about it because I know you're anti-spoilers, but he's definitely in the lead of an away team. So, landing party.
Landing party is the wrong era.
He's definitely in charge of a landing party. And that's another thing that seems really cool is, hey, they get off the ship.
Yay, no more bottle episodes.
Exactly. We actually get some exploration on a planet surface. Hooray.
Yeah.
So that looks cool. And obviously, after our little diversion of a time loop, we have to get back to things like, well, what happened to Admiral Cornwell?
Right. I was about to bring her up because they left that hanging last episode, six. I'm getting all my numbers messed up. Episode yes. six, they left that hanging big time.
Big time, yeah. So we get to see a little, at least somewhat, we get to figure out what happened to her. So.
Yeah, and also, like, is Lorca gonna try to go after her? Is, you know, what mm-hmm. whatever happened with that? Because this one, we just took a little sidestep and went on a trip, you know, very episodic. And then now we're, I feel like, I'm guessing we're gonna come back to the main story arc. So
it seems like we would, yeah. And of course, as we know, she, Admiral Cornwall, is the one that could out Lorca's problems, right? So yep. is he gonna be in any hurry? It's like you were just saying, is he in any hurry to go rescue her, you know?
Right.
Because when she gets back, she's going to go file reports that say he's in no way fit to command.
Yeah. So. Maybe he can convince mm-hmm. her not to do that by saving her ass.
Ah, that's very possible.
Yeah. Well, we will see next week, November 5th, next Sunday. I can't wait. And then... the next day, we will be chatting about episode 8 of Star Trek Discovery. So join us again next week on another edition of Shuttlepod at the Disco. And we'll see you next time.
Yeah, we'll see you next time, guys.
Bye, guys.